This is far from over. You haven't seen the last of me. You haven't seen the last of me. They can say that I won't stay around.
Welcome back to the Film Experience Podcast. This is part two of a conversation we had after the BAFTAs. We were just too chatty to keep it to one podcast this time. You may recall we were just discussing my favorite party game, which is to switch the nominated actors and imagine them in each other's roles. We went through a lot of interesting ones, so you'll want to listen to the first part of the podcast if you haven't heard it yet. We're finishing up that conversation. And just as a reminder, this is Nathaniel from the Film Experience, and my guests are Nick from Nick's Flick Picks, Joe from lowresolution.blogspot.com, and Katie Rich from Cinema Blend. And when I asked this question, a person I never thought of, and I wonder if this is about our perception of his range or actually about him, is Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
I was thinking about
it's
that.
It's tough to imagine him in a very wide range of roles.
But he's so great.
What if he played Paul and the kids are all right? What if that happened? I feel like no one would believe it, but like the subset of nerdy people who would totally believe it. I'd go for it, but I don't think anybody else would.
He's still too young to play that kind of role, was the thing. I feel like his age also plays into, in terms of these roles, these 10 nominated roles, his age limits him in a lot of ways. But also, yeah, he's even with how much Mark Zuckerberg expanded his range is still of such a clear type. Mm-hmm. That,
yeah.
But
so, do you think that's something he can grow out of as he gets older?
Social Network was a hell of a good first step. So,
it's good to remember that we often get surprised, like maybe not annually, but biannually, with an actor being like, "Whoa, where did that performance come from?" You know,
sure,
where it's just totally out of their what we perceived as their range. And I was thinking about this with. Nick, your piece on Benning was so good, and it is true that people assume it's always this regal, frosty woman who's sort of controlling, but she really does a lot more things than that.
Yeah,
even in what we've seen her do, it's just that what people remember for whatever reason is these other
certain
things.
Kind of role. Yeah, I think
this would be a good lead into the repeat nominee question that you wanted to
bring
up. Like what will Jesse Eisenberg be nominated for again, if anything?
Yeah, so for readers, some readers might remember this. I did my own little study. I'm not a numbers guy, so it may be faulty, but I think it's pretty close to accurate. It was probably like 3 or 4 years ago, and I went through all of the people who have been nominated for the actors for acting awards over the 80 years, and you know, which percentage of them went on to another nomination. You know, the theory that once you're nominated, they pay more attention to you.
Right.
So that you'll get nominated again. But in the study I did, it came out to about 67% of people, actors, I'm not talking about anything else, actors were never nominated again, which surprised me a little.
So yeah.
Well over half of people will never be nominated again.
Right.
So we have a lot of first-timers this year. And the first-timers this year, Christian Bale, John Hawks, Mark Ruffalo.
James Franco, Jesse Eisenberg. Jackie Weaver, Haley Steinfeld, and Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To me, of those, Christian Bale seems like the slam dunk to be nominated at least once more. Probably. I sort of see him as moving into the Philip Seymour Hoffman stage of his career, where he's going to be an automatic contender anytime he's in anything close to an Oscar genre type of a movie. He's sort of that guy who's, you know, the greatest actor never to be nominated for an Oscar kind of thing for so long. And now he's finally kind of clicked over onto the radar.
Yeah, kind of like how Jeff Bridges was like underappreciated for so long, and now it's almost guaranteed he's going to be overappreciated for at least a little while longer.
Right.
Not that he's not great in True Grit. I mean, I'm like, right. I love that movie, but it's, I mean, his automatic nomination there was only because he won last year.
Yes.
How many men have you shot?
Shot or killed?
Let us restrict it to killed so that we may have a manageable figure.
I think if James Franco makes 11 movies a year, it stands to reason he'll get nominated.
just out of numbers.
His next movie is Rise of the Apes. He's like, it's like he's deliberately saying, "No way, I'm not letting you give me another Oscar nomination."
Well,
I believe Your Highness comes out before Rise of the Apes,
also starring Natalie Portman, right?
He's just, James Franco is so unpredictable that it's so hard to know like what he will choose to do with himself.
I think he's gunning for Best Supporting Actress. And after that, Best Animated Short Subject.
He'll be the first person to win every Oscar.
To win every Oscar. I love that. I love that idea.
He's 80 years old and he's like, "I'm going to win that sound mixing Oscar."
And then melt them all down and make a sculpture. I think Mark Ruffalo feels to me likely to come back because it just seems like he's somebody that all of his colleagues really like him, which helps. And he's also kind of been in that place to me of people just, you know, who knows? But it seems like there are a lot of people who feel like he should have been nominated by now. And I'm hoping that this part is the kind of part that makes people think he, you know, it's both his wheelhouse and a stretch. And that seems good as a groundwork for getting more parts.
Then he, of course, is making a superhero movie next. I need to do a statistical analysis of how many acting nominees are next doing a superhero movie, because there's a lot. Natalie Portman's in Thor. Jennifer Lawrence is in X-Men.
Helen Bonham Carter does Tim Burton movies, close enough.
Yeah. Renner and Ruffalo are both in...
are both in the Avengers.
Jackie Weaver's doing Aquaman.
As Aquaman.
I was gonna hope she would be a Dark Knight villain.
It's funny,
not done casting Dark Knight villains, so I think you could have half of the nominees this year as Dark
Christian
Knight
Bale's villain. Gonna go to the Oscars and recruit villains. Honestly, for his next
Nick, right when you said that, I was looking at Jackie Weaver right when you said that, and her eyebrows are so arched and villainous. That I was just like, oh my god, it's like she does have like Ursula eyebrows from The Little Mermaid.
Oh my god, the live action Little Mermaid movie. Jackie Weaver is Ursula. Send that out into the universe right now, you guys.
You know how Jackie Weaver was saying at the Oscar nominee luncheon that she's actually gotten a bunch of offers already?
Yeah.
Which is so great to hear. But then I immediately have to wonder what kind of offers.
Right.
Yeah. Like, is she going to be playing... Did this many movies in production have a role for someone right. like her?
Sure.
I feel like she's going to be offered a bunch of villain roles. Like, she's going to get the Melissa Leo trap of, like the, you know, how she's playing, like, the... I hope she doesn't just play villains.
In terms of people coming back, like, I didn't expect Melissa Leo to be back.
Mm, yeah.
After Frozen River.
If I make 12 movies a year, y'all got to give me another one.
Yeah.
I mean, Frozen River was 28 movies ago for her. I'm not kidding. That's the number on IMDb.
Well,
it is
seriously?
28, yes.
But that's the thing, though, is that she's an actress who made an unexpected Oscar nomination really translate into all sorts of work that she would have never gotten. Like, that is, like, the Oscar success story in a nutshell. Is
also, she's, I think, kind of that SAG actor, you know, who makes, like, 10 a year because she does 3 or 4 days on a lot of them, and she's still doing the kinds of movies that she was doing when she was, you know, quote-unquote out of work in a Hollywood way. I mean, I was looking at her stuff, too, which is, like, hard to find and super weird and crazy, but, like, she also does, like, the audiobooks for James Patterson murder mystery. I mean, there's nothing she won't sort of say yes to.
Yeah, there's something admirable about that, like that, that desire to work.
And
that's actually how you start getting votes, is you know a ton of people who are going to vote on the Oscars.
Yeah, and I've just recently seen her play The Sex Pot, and I've seen her play the Civil War period romantic widow gal. I mean, like, kind of get the ads in a different way now. Like, she clearly knows how many different things she can play, which I had no idea she could play.
So in your research, you found that she has a lot of range?
Yeah. I mean, I'm halfway through this, you know, movie that probably cost $5 called Stephanie's Image, in which she plays this glamorous model in San Francisco who's been murdered and who's this woman is trying to make an investigative documentary about what happened to this woman who was shot by her boyfriend, and finds out that in addition to being a glamour model, she was making all these porn movies. And she made this like 4 years ago. So this isn't like when Melissa Leo was 22. And she totally is selling you on I'm the supermodel. Like, whoa.
Huh.
I mean, it's like Frozen River era. I think it's about 2 years before that. So she's got it.
question now that we're talking about repeat nominations. At what point does the narrative about Amy Adams become, oh my God, X number of nominations without a win? Three nominations and supporting actress in such a short period, like, I feel like that's a story making come her next nomination.
Yeah, right? I think four is the number where people start to freak out.
Yeah.
That you haven't won. Just in general, I think, you know, there's a lot of people with three nominations.
Yeah. I mean, here I am.
Who never won. But once you get to like four, it seems like most people are winners, and then it becomes like, oh my God, they always lose.
But is she somebody who we now expect to not only get a fourth, but to eventually win one just because she's...
Well, I would have said yes, except for it's interesting to me that hasn't kicked in at all this year.
Right.
Like people haven't been like, it's Amy Adams' time, which kind of surprised me.
Right. Particularly because I feel like she's so impressive in The Fighter in a way that hasn't really been latched onto as a narrative, like stepping out of what had become this very naive character rut. I say rut in quotation marks because I don't know if that's necessarily a bad streak of movies for her.
Right.
But it certainly was a breakout from the types of roles that she had been playing.
Yeah. But in a way it's so understated that it's kind of hard, like, she hasn't been fighting that hard for it. Like, she's been out there, but not in a hardcore way. And the role is so, like, she fits so well into the movie. She doesn't, like, command attention in the way that Christian Bale and Melissa Leo do. I think that they have easily gotten so much praise because for the caveats I have from Melissa Leo, I do think they're both really good in it. And Amy Adams seems kind of happy to, like, be part of this great ensemble and have it as this example of what she can do and, you know, look at the long game with it, which is
kind of my favorite. She's my favorite of that whole
strategy.
Cast.
Yeah, her humility might be playing into there not be like winning traction for her this year, you know.
Well, she's also got a new baby, you know, she's got other stuff to do. Like, maybe she just like let this not be her year and use this toward her, you know, Oscar.
Right, but sometimes when people have a new baby or are pregnant, that becomes the narrative.
That's true.
True.
Is it possible that if Melissa Leo weren't also in the movie that Amy Adams would be more of the front runner? Because it's not just splitting the votes, but sort of having such a gravier performance right next to her has sort of put her in a certain kind of shadow. But if she were just competing against the other three, I would feel really sanguine about her chances for all the reasons you guys are saying. But
I think that's very true.
Yeah, or if that part...
So next time, no female cast made Amy Adams.
You've tried it. It doesn't work.
Well, I don't know if you guys had read this thing about Darren Aronofsky when he was going to do The Fighter.
Right.
David O. Russell was saying that the female parts were very small.
Yeah.
Really? So if it had, you know, in all the reworkings they did of the movie, it could have easily been a situation where the mother role was not, I mean, they would have lost so much fun of the movie, but.
Yeah.
Because if you lose the sisters
Aronofsky's
and
the
Fighter,
mother. I don't think I would like much.
It would have definitely been a much different movie.
It's weird for it to be so public. Like, usually when someone has been developing, they kind of keep it on hush. Like, everyone knows that this was going to be his movie, and it's so kind of surreal to think about that parallel universe.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah, because they're both in the competition this year.
On the opposite tip, I don't think David O. Russell's Black Swan would turn out to be anything quite so amazing.
That's
true.
They made the right choices.
David O. Russell's Black Swan would have been really funny.
It would have been hilarious.
We'll play the director game. I think David O. Russell's Kids Are All Right would have been a blast.
Yes. True.
Yeah.
And Christopher Nolan's Toy Story 3 would have been astounding.
And
intricacies and its plotting. And, oh, man, it would have been great.
I would happily see Christopher Nolan's Toy Story 3.
I think Barbie would have had to die, though, and haunt Ken. or Mrs. Potato Head would have been the one haunting them.
You do have to have a ghost woman somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, so 2010. We're not going to make predictions, obviously. There's way too many categories and way too many of us. But this was Nick's idea, and I think it's a great idea. We want to each share a couple things that we will remember or that we think are important about this film year that have nothing to do with Oscar.
This actually has something to do with Oscar, but I'm still struck by the Best Picture nominees that we have how many of them are small movies and how many of them made a ton of money? I think that's something that I remember that Black Swan was a hit and The Fighter was a hit and The Social Network was a hit and The King's Speech was a hit and True Grit, and like the True Grit passed Little Fockers at the box office. Like all of these really amazing successes for movies that no one expects to be marketable anymore. Mm-hmm. And that it makes me so encouraged. Like even if all these movies aren't perfect, they're so much better than a lot of the garbage that got released around the same time and did much worse. And that it gives me so much hope going forward, and that hopefully, you know, the studios will see it the same way I do and make more of good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of the same thing and remembering that, you remember when 4 years ago in 06 when Marie Antoinette flopped and The Fountain flopped and Children of Men didn't do as well as they thought an apocalyptic movie released on Christmas would do for some reason? And it's just then Babel and Little Children, and then like there was just the whole like, oh, our whole like upstart generation of interesting talent has proved that they can't handle a budget, or if you give them money, it's a disaster. And I felt like this really turned that around, like both for the box office reason that you're saying, but just this idea that Fincher and Aronofsky and Deborah Gronick, but also just seeing like Ben Affleck make such a good movie and Noah Baumbach still sort of sticking in there and being really interesting. And I just think that I thought really great about this. Unfortunately, this morning I read the Mark Harris piece in GQ where he talks about how Hollywood is actually more risk averse than ever. And everyone's trying not. Did you guys read this?
No.
He sort of builds it around Inception and says that you would imagine that, you know, a movie that made $800 million around the world based on all the things that you think Hollywood wants to do, but the public tells them that they're not allowed. And we told them this year it can be smart, it can be creative, it can be science fiction, we'll totally go. And that every single studio is refusing to greenlight anything that looks like Inception. And like they all just talked to reporters about what a fluke that was. And, you know, that's something that would never happen twice. And they only did it because they needed to keep Nolan happy so he would do the third Batman. But otherwise that never would have happened. And it's really, he paints a really opposite dismal picture, I have to say. But I'm kind of hoping he wrote it before what Katie's talking about happened. And like the winter season has just been such a great success story for these smaller budgeted dramas.
I expect a lot more Inceptions, but I would like a lot more Black Swans or The Kids Are Rights or something like that. Like that's all. Like those are not big movies, but they made such a profit and they're so much more interesting than most of what a studio wants. Mm-hmm.
And they interview Ben Affleck in it, and I mean, and who is saying, you know, I think my movie's the least expensive one that Warner Brothers made among their sort of wide releases this year, and you would think that they'd be happy to make 10 of those rather than, you know, 3. Whatever, but they're just definitely not. But I did think between The Town and How to Train Your Dragon and even The Social Network, I mean, there were just a lot of really in-house studio filmmaking that seemed really good to me this year.
Yeah, I kind of went with under the radar theme for a couple of these, where I think I look at an actress like Karina Fernandez, who was in Another Year, who I so loved in her one scene in Happy Go Lucky as the dance instructor.
Yeah.
But then, so she shows up and she's got a slightly bigger role in Another Year as the fiance of the son. Like the absolute funniest scene in that entire movie, where she's sort of reacting to how awful Leslie Manville's character is, but in this really overtly cheerful way, she like fake hangs herself with a scarf and like, I died. It's so great. And I'm just sort of looking forward to when Mike Leigh kind of hands her the reins of some future, whether it's not, you know, not necessarily the next one down the line. But, like, I just have a feeling that her presence in those movies is going to grow. And even beyond Mike Leigh movies, I'm really looking forward to see what she does. And then two movies that are not on anybody's radar, although, Nathaniel, I know you nominated The Runaways for quite a bit in your Film Bitch Awards, which I love because I really thought that movie really stuck with me throughout the year. Not a perfect movie. It has really extended lull towards the late middle. Mm-hmm. But director Floria, and I'm going to mispronounce this last name, Sigismondi, perhaps?
Sigismondi, I think.
Sigismondi. I'm really looking forward to see what she does next. She doesn't have anything next lined up on IMDb. I just really thought that movie was more than it needed to be. And I like that when you're talking about, well, it's Girl Rockers and we'll throw in Dakota Fanning and Kristen Stewart, but it didn't rest on just that sort of casting audaciousness.
Yeah.
And the other movie that I really like that nobody's really talked about was the remake of The Crazies.
I liked that movie too.
I thought it was so good, and it had this really sort of laser-like focus on the characters, and it was like, you are going to fucking care about these people as we put them through this ringer in a way that not nearly enough horror movies do these days. And there was inventiveness in the way the plot sort of moved around, and it wasn't just these usual horror movie beats, and for a remake especially. So the director of that is Breck Eisner, also doesn't have a next movie lined up, at least according to IMDb. Two filmmakers
He's working on a bunch of different things. He's been developing a couple of big budget things. He'll be around, yeah.
Oh man, I can't wait to see what he does next.
I can't remember exactly what he's doing next.
I'm hoping we look at it as the beginning of like a great partnership between Guadagnino and Tilda Swinton.
Mm.
I know they've been working together, you know, and their friends and stuff. But if I Am Love did well for that type of film, in at least in America. I haven't looked at the international returns. And I'm really hoping someone gives them a chance to do something else together. Because I think that could be a super interesting director muse pairing. I mean, we're getting like the 7th DiCaprio Scorsese soon.
Yeah.
So yeah, whatever number it is, and Helena is going back to Burton. Throughout Hollywood history, I love stories of like director actor partnerships.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a really exciting one to watch develop. The other thing that I wanted to mention was also a director, Jean Cameron Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
I know, Joe, you really liked his direction of Rabbit Hole.
I did.
And I preferred his other two movies in a way, even though there are parts of Rabbit Hole that I completely love. But I did think it was such an interesting, like, sort of, not diversion, but swerve.
I felt like he did for Rabbit Hole a lot of what David O. Russell did for The Fighter, which is take a movie that you feel like you have pegged when you hear the description or even when you see the trailer. Mm-hmm. And particularly because he was bringing to it from the stage. I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot more visually going on there than you would expect coming from a stage adaptation.
My other one is Sofia Coppola.
Mm-hmm.
In that, yeah. Like somewhere I thought it was good. But I do wonder how far down this rabbit hole is going to go. Cause mm-hmm. it does seem like it's the most navel gazing of all of her movies. And she always gets that criticism, and it just seems like even more so. I don't know if anybody else felt that way. So I wonder if this will be a pivot point for her career where it's all downhill, or if she's going to do an about face. Or
I think she's going to have to make a movie where a superhero lives in a hotel.
I think I feel the way about Sofia Coppola I was just going to say that it reminds me of the conversation that's been around Wes Anderson about how similar his movies are and how insular his movies are. Uh-huh. And on just some basic level, I love his movies so much that I kind of don't care. And I feel like if he wants to go the Woody Allen route and just sort of like variations on a theme throughout his entire career, I think I would be perfectly fine with that. Sofia Coppola, maybe less so, because I feel like there's more fluctuation into the degrees to which I like her movies, but I really fairly well enchanted by Somewhere. I really loved that time where I was staring at it in the movie theater, and it doesn't go beyond a very limited worldview, but I feel like that part of that was the point, and I don't think I would have sacrificed being able to see Somewhere for her tackling something else, at least not this year.
Well, I also think of Wes Anderson, where he did The Fantastic Mr. Fox, and that was really so much of his themes, but it was different enough. And it was so charming. And I think that kind of reinvented him and made me really reconsider what he could bring to it. And I think she definitely has that in her. Do another variation on the theme that just is different enough to, like, I mean, I don't know. I think of like Hotel Chevalier, like the short before Darjeeling Limited. Mm-hmm. Like that was something else similar where it was like, okay, I see something different here. Like Sofia Coppola, if she can mix it up, she can do something animated. She can do a short, take someone else's script, something like that, I think could help her a lot.
I feel a little bit the same way about Nicole Holofcener, who I feel like got a lot of, you know, applause at the end of the year for Please Give, which I found to be her somewhere in a way. Like, I'm starting to get a little... I liked elements of that movie, but I'm feeling a little bit exasperated with what also feels like a rut. And that Catherine Keener just feels like a default, and New York feels a little bit like a default. And so I'm wondering if the fact that there were so many people who liked Please Give a lot, and it got some screenplay citations and things, if it will maybe open up an opportunity for her to direct something that she didn't write, or set a movie somewhere else. But I'm excited that, even though it wasn't my favorite of her things, that it might lead to a little bit more experimentation for her. And I, you know, even if she does continue to make the same things, it seems like she might get more of an audience or more credit the next time she puts something out.
Directors, like, it's tough to know what they're going to take from their success or failure.
Yeah.
You know, because some people tend to come back much stronger as themselves, and other people try completely different things. And other people just, if they're successful, just get in more of a rut because...
Yeah,
they figure it's working. So Aronofsky's such an interesting case in this way, because it's not like he got less weird.
Yeah,
right.
But people hated The Fountain so much. I mean, not me, but people hated it. And yeah. So it's interesting that that was viewed as such a fiasco, but he can still stay completely weird, and then suddenly everybody loves him.
Do you guys think that... Okay, so the talk about financial success, the Coen brothers just had their biggest... Is there any chance it will change anything about them, or are they going to just go about their lives as if nothing has changed? Because I kind of think the latter.
The latter.
Yeah, I think we're getting...
Yeah, like
another serious man will be in the pipeline pretty soon, I think, with all his grit money.
That is wonderful. I'm so glad to hear it.
I forgot one thing. In the grand scheme of things, this year will be remembered as the coming out ball of Emma Stone.
Sure.
Of Emma Stone?
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody seemed to latch on to.
Like,
it was one of those performances that really everybody got on the same page about.
If the movie were her equal, that would have been such a huge deal this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worst song ever.
I was going to say, on the Coppola Holofcener tip, too, it'll be interesting to see how Whit Stillman comes back this year after many years away. But because the Holofcener always reminds me of him in that way, and that the movies all seem to be, if not remakes of each other, then just, again, like very slight variations on a theme. But I loved The Last Days of Disco so much. It'll be really interesting to see how he comes back with his first movie since then. Like...
Mm.
But has the time off changed it? And is the, I don't know, the sensibility the same? I'm very much looking forward to that.
I want to see the Animal Kingdom guys' next movie, whatever it is.
Ooh, yes.
I'm totally excited for Andrea Arnold's Wuthering Heights. I thought that was me. Amazing job with that movie. Like, I just was imagining... Cause
wait, I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I missed that.
No, Let Me In, Matt Reeves.
Oh,
like,
okay.
After Cloverfield and that, which are not similar. And I know that Nathaniel and a lot of... that you're not alone in thinking he just kind of largely Xeroxed an existing movie, but I thought it had a really neat texture that felt different from the first one, and I was just thinking about how the Oscar narrative around Best Director has been kind of these, you know, I hate this word now because of you know who, but the Mavericks who kind of came home to something. And I'm just wondering, like, who in 10 years might be in that circle who's kind of a bubbling under talent right now. And there seem like between all these kinds of figures, like there are a lot of people who I'm interested to see where they go.
Yeah, around the same time as Let Me In, Never Let Me Go, which I didn't really love, but I think had a lot going for it. And Mark Romanek did a lot with it. And I kind of wonder how he'll move on from there, because it's been a while since he made a movie. The direction in that is really good, even if it doesn't quite...
I love that movie, and I thought the leap up from One Hour Photo, which I kind of hated was such a strong leap that I'm definitely looking forward to see what he does after that. And also somebody like Joshua Marston, who I've been thinking about ever since Maria Full of Grace, what's next for him, because it seemed like that was such a strong opening statement, and now he's got something in Berlin right now that was premiered in Berlin, so I'm super excited to see that.
About new directors, I can never remember his name, Cary Fukunaga?
Fukunaga, yes.
Like Sinombre was, Sinombre was very good, and
yes.
But it just, Jane Eyre just seems such an odd follow-up, so I'm like really interested. Katie?
Oh, I think
we lost you.
Excited to hear what you guys have to say about when I come out. Can you hear me?
I can now.
Okay. So what did I say that managed?
We didn't hear anything.
Anything. We heard
just that. Well, you were talking about Cary Fukunaga, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really. I saw Jane Eyre, and I'm not really allowed to talk about it yet. But I really liked it. So I hope it lives up to your expectations as well.
Cool.
Exciting.
Now you just, whenever people say they can't talk about something, that's all I want to talk about. Wait, I was like, but
I know,
did you see Sinombre on it anywhere? Actually, the studio must be blocking your phone.
Like an evolution of like his kind of personal style. Oh, you can't hear me.
Yeah, the studio's tapped your phone and they're muting you.
Literally every time you switch from talking about
we
can hear you is when we can hear you again.
Okay, then I'm done. We'll talk about Jane Eyre later.
Okay. Well, we should wrap up anyways.
Okay. I think that for the next week we should play our own actor game and we should swap websites and the reader should cast us to do each other's. Yeah. I've always wanted to write a low-resolution article, and maybe this is my chance.
Wait, you're going to write about football?
I'm going to write about football for Joe. That's right, and I'm also going to do recaps of Community and Parks and Recreation.
One of you has to write about Batman casting rumors for my site. You can find yourselves for that.
And Katie will have to write ode to women of a certain age actresses for my site.
I happily do.
Okay, I'm Nathaniel from The Film Experience.
I'm Nick from Nick's Flick Picks.
I'm Joe from Low Resolution.
I am Katie from Cinema Blend.
And thanks for tuning in this Oscar season. We will be back. We'll probably take a week off of some sort. We may be back, maybe in a different format. We'll see.
Okay.
Oh, actually, we have to have our post-Oscar show.
Yeah, we got to have a wrap-up show.
Yeah, we'll do a post-Oscar.
And then we'll have like a mini break, and then we'll figure out what we're doing.
Okay.
We'll figure
how's that for a coming soon?
We're going to go test it and go learn how to make shoes and live on an island and then figure out what we want.
We'll have a Daniel Day-Lewis sojourn away from the movies. Become cobblers.
Right. Totally.
Okay, so that was our last show before the Oscars, but I wanted to leave you with this hideous rendition of You Haven't Seen the Last of Me by none other than James Franco. Enjoy. And I do say that with quotation marks.
Once more from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I have to do a long intro. One, two, three.
Feeling broken, barely holding on. But there's something so strong somewhere inside me. And I am down, but I'll get up again. Don't count me out just yet. I've been brought down to my knees, and I've been pushed way past the point of breaking, but I can take it. I'll be back on my feet. This is far from over. You haven't seen the last of me.
You haven't seen the last of me. Sorry. All right, let's do one more. I feel like I screwed that one up.